What I do is I visually think in my mind the last animal I rescued. And it's an emotional thing, but I got to put it back and say, I'm going to speak for that animal. I'm going to speak for that animal. I'm going to speak for Lambert. I'm going to speak for the snakes. And I'm just going to get it out there. It has nothing to do with me.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. Welcome to Species Unite, the podcast where we talk to people who are fighting some of the hardest fights on Earth to stop the unnecessary suffering of animals. Today's conversation is with Tim Harrison. Tim is a retired Ohio police officer, firefighter, and paramedic, and he's a leading expert when it comes to dealing with the exotic pet trade. He's also the director of Outreach for Animals, and he was the subject of Mike Weber's documentary, The Elephant in the Living Room. The Elephant in the Living Room is a film that explores the growing trend of people owning dangerous exotic animals, predators, lions, tigers, bears, wolves, as pets. And it's a much bigger thing, I think, than most people realize throughout the United States. And Tim has been a first responder in many situations where things have gone wrong. Tim and I met a few weeks ago in Ohio, and he told me quite a few stories about exactly those sorts of situations. Before we start talking about the exotic pet trade and your insane amounts of work, you've spent almost four decades really making such a huge difference to not only many people's lives, but thousands upon thousands of animals. I want to talk about how you got into this in the first place and that you were kind of on the other side of it when you started. So could you tell us about that?
Yes, I hate to call it that, but I was on the dark side for years and I didn't know it because I'd watch TV. I started off watching Marlon Perkins when I was a little boy and I thought I want to do that. I want to wrestle the animals like Jim, wrestle the anaconda and all the jokes like that. But I took that seriously. Then when I got a little older, I started watching Johnny Carson. And there's Jim Fowler on there wrestling gators and stuff on the late night shows. And I'm thinking, man, this is the way to educate people. I love animals. And I was catching stuff when I was young. But I think that's cool. Then when I became 16, I became a veterinarian assistant for a veterinarian locally there in our area who happened to be a zoo vet also. So he would take me out with him when sometimes we get maybe four or five calls a year, maximum six, where we go out, somebody may have a bear chained up in their backyard. You know, we'd have to go rescue the bear and dig the chain out of its neck, maybe a big python or something like that. But it wasn't like everybody had exotics. And I started taking animals that I rescued off the street. I was rescuing animals continually. And
were these exotic animals or any animal?
Dangerous exotic animals, specifically dangerous exotic animals. We're talking about large pythons, venomous snakes, big cats, bears, primates.
And this was all in Ohio.
All in Ohio at that time. Now, I did cross later in my, when I became 21, I started crossing into Indiana, Pennsylvania, Michigan, because nobody else was doing it. And the local police are not trained for this, so they try to call me to come help. And so we try to wrangle these animals. We didn't have dart rifles back then. Try to wrangle them safely, which you can do, but it's time consuming and it's dangerous if people not trained. So when 1995 hit, that's when reality TV hit. When Animal Planet, Steve Irwin, all these shows came on TV where people are wrestling, it's man versus nature kind of thing. When that hit, I blew up from 1995 into 1996. I went from six calls a year to 112 in 1996 of the most dangerous creatures on the planet. I'm looking at these venomous snakes from Australia and Asia that were coming in. People are buying venomous snakes because they're imitating what they see on TV. And then I realized whatever was shown on Animal Planet or these animal reality TV shows were immediately for sale at the auctions. Thousands of people come, untrained, and buy the most dangerous creatures on the planet. That was right around the same time I went to Africa for the first time on an expedition. And I got over there, and I saw my first giraffes running. And I thought, holy, and I just took a giraffe out of somebody's garage in Troy, Ohio.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it had such atrophy of its neck, it can't raise its neck. It took almost 6 to 8 months to get its neck muscles back to raise up again. And then we drove out with the Jeeps out there, and I saw African lions for the first time. And the male did not look like any male I ever rescued. He raised up, he flexed, he saw the muscles running in his arms, and he looked at me. And I'm thinking, that cat is wild. But when that reality TV was the main thing, and I can tell you straightforward how I can prove it, not just me going to ask people why they bought the cobra, or why did you get this animal? They'd always say it was because Steve Irwin. Well, Finding Nemo is a perfect example. Finding Nemo through the whole stinking movie says, don't put me in an aquarium, done it. What happened? $13.5 billion a year industry the very next year. People were buying them before, but exploded. Everybody wanted a Nemo.
You are kidding me.
No, that's the American psyche. We got a gator in the backyard, nipped a little girl. Oh, I got it because of Steve Irwin. And even the same time we were there at that house, I looked at a big empty cage in the living room and I said, what was in there? He said, two Burmese pythons. I said, where are they at now? Oh, we took them down to the Everglades and turned them loose because nobody else would take them.
How did you get so comfortable? Because watching you in the movie in Elephant in the Living Room and also watching you in a lot of the clips that I saw of you, it's like you grew up in the Jungle Book, the way you handle these animals and walk around with them. And this, you're picking up cobras and lions and cougars. I mean, you certainly don't look like a guy who was raised in Ohio.
Sadly, that's where I run into most of them.
That's where they are.
I don't have to go to India to see a tiger.
No.
I don't go to Africa to see a Gaboon viper. You know, I don't have to go to Australia to see a taipan. I just stay right here to come to any town, USA. I grew up on a farm. Anybody that works around large animals respects the hell out of large animals. Anybody that works around venomous snakes respects the hell out of them.
Right.
When you see me handle those animals, it's gently. My term is gentle. You're there for the animal first. And that's why I've never been attacked. I've been charged, but I've never been physically harmed. One of my heroes is Dr. Temple Grandin. Read her books, met her. She's even said once before, what have I done for you? And I told her, I said, you helped me with a bear one time in an apartment.
Wait, tell us the story about the bear.
There was a black bear in an apartment here in Dayton, Ohio.
Of course.
Of course. The bear was up in an apartment building and nobody knew it. They thought the lady had a big dog and that was making lots of noise and everything else. The neighbor next door was cooking spaghetti with heavy garlic sauce and these walls were like paper thin. And that bear goes through the wall and it heads through what's the greatest part of it is, it heads through the wall. The bear, and the woman tells me the bear had its eyes closed and it's going, sniffing like, oh, this is great. Tears through the wall, goes in and knocks the big pan of spaghetti off the stove. So when I get there, okay, the law enforcement's already there and they're scared. We're going to have to shoot it. We're going to have to shoot. There's kids all over the place, you know, and it's up in an apartment. So I'm thinking in my mind, let's go up here and see what we can do. So I go up and this bear's just eating away. I didn't touch him. I just walked in and I looked and I saw he's busy eating. So I grabbed the handles. The pan, I started leading the bear down the steps. Down where all we had was a police paddy wagon, basically. We didn't know anything to put it in. So I'm coming down the steps and it stops. It won't go any farther. There's a landing. So I sat down with the bear. I'm not kidding. The bear is eating. I'm sitting with the bear. And the guys are like, what are you going to do? I said, hold on a second. Let me think. And I'm thinking, Temple Grandin, animals in transition. Okay, why is this bear not passing this area? And I look up and there's a light coming through this little window. And there's this big bright spot on that landing. So I told one of the firefighters, it almost makes me tear up. Gets along, it's called a pipe pole, big long pole, takes a cloth, covers up the window, and down we go. So when I told her that, she goes, you get it. Yes, I do get it. And I appreciate you. I appreciate it. But she's probably my number one hero.
That's your woman.
Yeah.
And so you got the bear into the paddy wagon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. As long as you have food, you got to keep aware all the time because it's crazy because people have a tendency to start hoarding, bringing them in. Like the gentleman in New York. Do you remember they had the up in Harlem and had the tiger up in his?
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing with him, he was going to start his own Garden of Eden. He had a lion cub. He had a tiger. He had an alligator in a bathtub. Guess where he bought those animals?
Ohio.
Mount Hope, Ohio. Took them across state lines. That's why we need a big cat public safety act. That's why we need a big national law. Because these are crossing state lines like crazy.
The laws are really confusing to me.
Yes, they are.
And they change a lot. And it feels like certain states, you can kind of have like 52 lions and a bear in your backyard. And other states, this doesn't really exist very much. Can you give me a rundown?
Well, the best way is to start off with Ohio. We were the worst. We had the biggest exotic auctions. We have 5 AZA zoos, which is more than any other state. We have a ton of roadsides. Then we had breeders who all now have moved into Pennsylvania and Indiana and Texas. The New York Times called us the Wild Wild West because it was just, you can do anything, get anything you want. Then you go to places like California and some of these places where they said, you're allowed to have 2 chimps on your permit. And it turns out what happens to a lot of these people, they'll have 2 chimps out front and 6 chimps over at their friend's house. So they still have those 2 chimps and they can just, every time somebody comes in, if they sell those 2, they have 2 more to replace it. 2 more. It's crazy stuff like that, but there's loopholes in all these laws. And one is for educational purposes. So we got organizations like the ZAA. They come in and they say, we're an educational organization, but they breed like crazy. And he went private ownership. So
will you tell us about the ZAA?
The ZAA, they call themselves the Zoological Animal Association. They are the Jack Hanna's organization, the groups that like to take animals on TV shows and bring animals out and let people pay to play, as we call it. You come and do a VIP party, which they make literally millions of dollars. And that's what Joe Exotic did. He was a big breeder, and he did that across the country, but malls, fairs. Then you would get there and get your picture taken with a tiger cub or get your picture taken with a bear cub. So these pay-to-play individuals are making a fortune off this, so they can't, and the ZAA supports that. That's their organization, supports the breeding and the continual breeding privately of these animals. Now see, as a public safety aspect, that's where it's crazy. We don't need these animals in private homes that we don't know about. Here in Dayton, Ohio, years ago, we had a tiger jump out while the firefighters were fighting a house fire in the west side of Dayton, Ohio. Luckily, he was below the age of four, so he looks like a monster, right? He's 200, 300 pounds, but he's still a kitten in his head. So I was able to get him into a sheriff's deputy's car, which he tore the hell out of, into the interior of it. But I was in there before they had to shoot him. Because I tell you the truth, 90%, I didn't say even more than that, 90% of law enforcement does not want to shoot these animals.
Of course not.
They don't. And that's what a lot of people get the wrong idea about, that they're out gunning for these animals. No, they're not. Because there's still officers that have shot animals, like at the San Francisco Zoo when the tiger got out. I've met a couple of them that were involved with that. Zanesville, I was there for that. Think of all the victims of Zanesville. That's what I bring up a lot of times when I speak at these conferences for law enforcement stuff. Think of all the victims. Okay, there were 56 animals, 49 of them were killed.
For people who don't remember or didn't hear about it, will you just give a...
Yeah, Zanesville was a situation where there's a gentleman named Terry Thompson. He just got out of prison. Before, when he was actually in court, he was telling people in court, if you put me in prison, if I go into jail, I'm going to turn all my animals loose and I'm going to blow my effing brains out. So what's he do a year after he gets out of prison? He does exactly what he said. Was no freak accident. Where Terry Thompson turned 56 of the most dangerous creatures loose on the city of Zanesville on purpose, to pay back the cops, to pay back exactly what he said back in the courtroom.
And so what happened? All these animals are literally running
free.
And what kind of animals was it?
38 big cats, tigers, African lions, cougars, mountain lions, leopards. They were all running free. Then we had wolves. We had bears, all kinds of bears. Well, they had to shoot those animals. It was getting dark and it was raining. You can't dart in the dark. We don't have a machine gun dart thing to shoot these animals. And you have to know how much they weigh, because you can have a drug-crazed animal running through your neighborhood, which is more dangerous than a cat just walking.
So what happened after?
Oh, right after, we had a lot of the organizations contact me, with PETA, the Humane Society, they contacted me. And I said, listen, it's not the police officer's fault on this one. They're not at fault. It's a situation where the state was at fault, the governor's at fault. If we had the laws, this never would have happened. And after that, they started talking about revising the laws, right?
And so did that change? Did the laws here in Ohio change after that?
Yes. They become, they're very, very strict laws. Now there's no more auctions. You can't sell them anymore. There's no more private ownership of dangerous exotic animals. But there is still those little loopholes where somebody else start their own little nonprofit, or they'll start their own little educational group where they're allowed to have a bobcat, or they're allowed to have a cougar or something like that. So there, you could still have them, but it's not like it was. We're talking literally thousands of animals in the state of Ohio, talking about venomous snakes, pythons, primates. They were just amazing.
What is the obsession with all these venomous snakes?
And it goes back to want to imitate what you see on TV. You're pulled into this aura of being Steve Irwin. They start off with a python, and they move to a copperhead, and they move to a rattlesnake. It's like people driving fast cars. They want to get the most dangerous, the most beautiful, the most dangerous thing they can get.
And is it sort of an ego thing?
It's a big ego thing.
Right. And is that the same then with tigers, lions?
Yes.
Because I think in the extras too, in the elephant in the living room, as well as on some other clips you sent me, people talking about relationships, their relationships with their big cats or their whatever kind of predator they own. This kind of master that I've not only... I love it like my dog, but it's 10 times more because I've mastered a predator.
Absolutely.
Is that That's pretty common across the board?
Just think of it when you saw the elephant in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Terry taking the lion cub downtown?
Yeah.
He's a lion, man.
I mean, Terry looks like a lion.
He does.
Yeah.
In fact, as the film went on, he got more bushier, didn't he?
He looked
like the lion.
He did.
Looked like the cowardly lion on the, we teased him about that. They all have a unique flair, and they all know more than everybody else does. That's the scary part, because when you come in and try to help them, Because you got to remember, when I come in some of these places where there's laws, I can't take an animal off somebody's property like you saw there. They have to give them up.
So can I have you to now, with though, with the new laws?
The only time we can go on a property and take something from somebody is when there's been a serious situation happen, like somebody killed or injured, and that animal needs to be taken. But then you have to hold it. It's the sanctuaries have to hold that animal for a period of time while they make a legal judgment of who's going to, if they're allowed to have it back, or do they have the permits, or are they going to get the permits, and what's going on. It's a nightmare.
And the truth is, people just don't know. And when people have seen, especially all the TV, since they were kids, it doesn't look bad to people until they actually know. Watching all of this exotic stuff, there was one woman on something you sent me with the tigers and in the backyard with all the cages, and thinking, my tiger's so happy. He lives in, you know, a 12 by 12 horse stall size cage, and that's all he does all day long. There's something that flips, I think, in the human psyche that really believes that. I don't think anybody's trying to be cruel.
No, that's a good comment. They aren't. These people have good intentions. They honestly believe the pablum that they've been fed, the lies have been fed. We have to save the endangered tigers. We're not saving any endangered tigers by keeping them in your backyard.
None of this has anything to do with.
No, it doesn't. But they don't see that. They don't see that.
I know you leave Ohio a lot to come and save the day. but where do you find yourself most? Like, what's the new Ohio, basically? Is what I'm
asking. Pennsylvania is pretty bad. It's really bad. Indiana's got some problems. And then we go start blending down to Missouri, Arkansas, then you start going down to Oklahoma. Oklahoma, as we know, Joe Exotic, Tiger Safari, all these different groups there.
Are there still auctions as bad as the one in the film?
They're more secretive now. Oklahoma's got some really big auctions. And there is still the roadside stuff where you'll have like a fair, and then in the background you can buy a bear or a tiger. That still goes on quite a bit, but it's not like it was. It's not like an open like it was till we started kicking butt with that. You saw that Inside Edition undercover piece, first time ever done, and that's what an auction looks like. Look at the crowd when you look at that cut of video. Look at the massive crowd in that building buying lion cubs
and kangaroos.
Kangaroos, sloths. Funny thing, I can tell you, I went down to some big wildlife summit in Costa Rica. They invited me down. I went down. I kept thinking, what am I doing here? What am I here for? You know, why am I down here? They wanted me to show some of the auction stuff, and there's sloths. And you should have seen the researchers down there. The people from other countries go, they got tears in their eyes. They're selling sloths in Ohio? They don't last long. But there was actually groups bringing sloths to your house for birthday parties. It just brought a tear to my eye thinking, I'm going after these big cats and these venomous snakes, and these sloths are being sold out. They didn't know how, you know, you got to keep it 80 degrees. You got a humidifier. You have to have things for this animal to live. And they're just carrying them out, just carrying them out. I'm thinking, in my mind now, I'm thinking, I'm watching the dead man walking.
So many animals are on the verge of extinction in the wild, and it's really going to happen in our lifetimes. While that's happening, we have this whole kind of insanity going on of
selfishness.
Yes. People who want a sloth, maybe there's so many other things you can be doing to help sloths.
But you got to have one. It's like Finding Nemo. I got to have one.
I mean, it makes no sense.
It doesn't. And see, I have two different psychologists who are trying to figure this. One lady, she was from Australia, who absolutely loved Steve Irwin. She calls it the Steve Irwin complex. Because, yeah, you're loving him, but my philosophy, I hate to say it, this is why I always tell people, I said, everybody wants a tiger cub, but nobody wants a tiger. And my philosophy is you're loving these animals to death. And that's what I want written on my tombstone. They love those animals to death. And I try to stop it. Because Dick Terry, he loved his lions. You know, in the movie, he loved his lions. He really did.
No, you can tell. And you love Terry, even though you feel, you can feel where it's sick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, you can see.
Yeah.
But you love, he's an amazing man.
He was in a different level than what I was. I was on his level, you know, 30 years ago. And so I understand it. That's why these people let me on the property. And after the film came out, this is what I want people to really understand too. People are saying, why other people aren't doing this? There's organizations that are out there doing great work. But you got to understand how blessed I am that I allowed Mike to bring me into his life, the filmmaker, Mike Weber. And he read the book, read my first two books. And he said, if any of this stuff is true, partially true, this is going to be amazing. I didn't want to do it. And now that I've done it, I get calls from people like, the two bears down at the Rankin House. That's where the Underground Railroad coming across the Ohio River, Ripley, Ohio. The gentleman down there, two bears. People go to the Rankin House by the thousands, the museum, and look down, there's two bears in a corn crib. I have to explain to a lot of people in New York and Los Angeles what a corn crib is.
Please do.
It's just a 20-foot by 20-foot round metal structure. It looks crappy, and you throw corn into it. And that's where they put these beautiful bears, and that's where they've for 20 years walked in a circle. So
it's a cage.
Basically, it's a cage. Oh, it's a corn crib. It's not even a cage. It's garbage.
Right.
But they're inside here. People would go up and see that all the time. All the organizations were trying to get them off. They come and try to buy them. They try to do everything. And the guy on the property was part of the militia down there. He's a dangerous man. He'd been on Fox TV. He's been on all these other places talking about the militia in Southern Ohio. So he was a dangerous person. Well, I get a call one time. This is what I get on a weekly basis. Now, he calls me up and he goes, "Hey, you the guy from that damn elephant movie?" And I said, "Well, I always say this. I could be. Do you like that damn elephant movie?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "I got two bears I need to move." I'm going, "Where are you at?" He goes, "Ripley, Ohio." And I look at my wife and go, "Oh my God, this is the Super Bowl. Everybody's been trying to get these bears." He runs them out of gunpoint off his property. And you can see it from the museum up on the hill. And that people were breaking their hearts seeing these bears down there.
Do you think that the Terry and Lambert, the whole combination of Lambert dying tragically, do you think people recognize themselves in Terry? And because he loved those lions, right?
What you said is absolutely beautiful. That's it. They put themselves in his shoes, and they realized there is somebody that's not going to judge him because he's been there. Because they said, "I want anybody else on my damn property. I only want you." So when the new documentary comes out, it's going to be the same thing again, fired up. You know, people, "I don't want anybody except that guy from the movie." And it's a lot of pressure.
It's hard to find more people like you, I would imagine.
There's people out there that have got the hearts and the ability, but what they don't have is also the backing of law enforcement, firefighters, first responders, government officials.
Is that common, by the way, to be all three? I didn't think so.
There's not very many of them out there as a police officer, firefighter, paramedic. So I did that for 29 years, and I it was absolutely probably the best thing I ever did. And people ask me, say, "Tim, you get on the radio. I sit here and talk to you all day, you know, about this stuff." And they say, "Man, I can't get in front of the camera. I can't get in front of the microphone." And I've taught a lot on. People will tell you some of these great people now are stepping up and doing some great stuff on TV now. I told them, I said, "Don't even think of yourself anymore. What I do is I visually think in my mind the last animal I rescued. And it's an emotional thing, but I got to put it back and say, I'm going to speak for that animal. I'm going to speak for that animal. I'm going to speak for Lambert. I'm going to speak for the snakes. And I'm just going to get it out there. It has nothing to do with me." And it's the mission that's important. That's disaster training. It's the mission that's important. You're not that important, no matter how much crap you have on the badges and everything else. And that's where I get that from.
And how does this end?
I tell you the truth, 63 years old, I go to bed at night thinking, orcas aren't, they're not going to bring orcas back. They're not going to take them from the wild anymore. They're not going to breed them anymore. Wow. Think about that. When I was a kid, there was no way. There's no way in my lifetime that was ever going to happen. Ringling Brothers closed a shop. I never thought that was going to happen. Ever, 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 ever. But you get the right people, the connections. Everybody from PETA, from the Humane Society of the United States, IFAW, International Fund for Animals. All of these groups get together, and it's powerful when we come together. Before, nobody got together. It's kind of a unifying kind of thing. I like to think I'm a little part of that. I'm able to come in and speak to everybody just like I do with the animals and the people and say, let's get together and let's kick some butt. Think of it this way, the Big Cat Public Safety Act.
Will you tell everyone who doesn't know what that is and how close it is right now?
The Big Cat Public Safety Act, years ago, myself and Tippi Hedren, you remember she has Shambhala, we were in the process of thinking about doing a documentary. We flew out there, we ran some stuff past her because she was kind of like my hero too. She came from the same background I came from, you know, Roar, the movie and all that stuff. She's invited us out and we come out and we're spending a couple days out there with her and she's trying to push this Big Cat Act through. Anyone going anywhere? So I said, why don't you do what I do in states across the country, you know, for little like cities and states. I said, why don't you get a Big Cat Public Safety Act? And it was Big Cat Public Safety Act, because that's what I push, because it's police officers are always the first ones on the scene. It's not the zoo. It's going to be the cops who are untrained show up when there's a tiger loose at the San Francisco Zoo, kills a boy and seriously injures two. What do? They call 911 and two cops came off the street and had to kill that tiger, and they'll never be the same again. So when people start thinking about the Big Cat Public Safety Act, I said, this is how you're going to reach those government officials. Because my goal is to look them in the face and say, oh, really? You don't care about your cops? Well, no, I never said that. Well, that's what this is about. They're the ones that show up when the tiger's loose. Wow. Yeah. So it pulls them, it makes them, guilts them into it. They invited me to get on board. And I came into the public safety part of it. The main thing is stay in your lanes. You let the lawyers do the lawyering. You let the guys like me do the public safety part of it. I talk about the incidences where they shot them, the incidents I was there when I had to catch them, endanger everybody. And then the other organization started backing it stuff, really pushing it too. Pete and the rest of them, they start their people going after them, their lobbyists. And I mean, when you've got a team like that, my gosh, we're kicking butt now. It's in the House now to be voted on, which is the highest it's ever got.
And what does it mean if it passes?
If it passes the House, the Big Cat Public Safety Act, no private ownership of big cats in the United States of America anymore, no private breeding anymore. It's amazing. Only credited zoological parks that are breeding them pure cats, not the mutants we have, you know, the mixed breeds, the pure cats. I was going to write a book. When you write books, it takes years. I wrote my first one in 2001, 2006, and I wrote mine now in 2019, another one coming out. It's going to be titled White Magic, The Curse of the White Tiger. It's going to be the true story about white tigers. Nobody's ever put it all together yet.
And when does it come out?
We're hoping to get that out by summer. We're going to wait till the new documentary comes out, and we're going to follow up because a couple of chapters actually work off what the documentary is about too. So we can't give it away. So
very mysterious.
It's really because the white magic term comes from me actually going undercover into that world and watching the guy go, hey, and you know, these are not biologists at the fair. And these aren't biologists at the zoo sometimes either. These are people that are just, get your picture taken with the cat, move on. Get your picture taken with the cub, move on. Pay to play. Get your play with the cat, get, you know, pay your VIP to come in. Well, the whole thing is that with the white tiger, I'm watching this and I'm just kind of hanging around, you know, acting like, oh, that's pretty cool stuff. And this guy was telling me, he goes, well, wait till you see white magic come out. Because he had an orange tiger cub. And I thought, and I was at this mall and I'm thinking, and there's a line already. And I'm thinking, wow, I said, white magic, what's that? I'm acting like I'm stupid. He goes, you'll see. And he brought that white tiger cub out. It tripled. People just packed to get their picture taken with that white tiger. And that's probably, to me, that is the poster child of what's wrong with breeding and the animal industry is the white tiger. Then the Cincinnati Zoo sold two white tigers to two magicians, Siegfried and Roy, and they bred the crap out of them.
All these white tigers are
that's it.
Are the, from those
from the
two
Zoo.
Tigers.
Yeah. You'll see it in the book. And it's so funny is that I take to trace it around to the tigers that come right back to the backyard in Ohio.
Unreal.
This is a story about an animal that is the poster child for what I'm talking about. My publisher even said it. She goes, I don't know. This is pretty political. And I said, no, it's not. This is history. This is the reason why there's a problem in the United States of America. And this is it's all set. And I'm very proud of it. Now, before I die, I got one more in me. And I want a book I want to write. It's called How to Love Animals by Leave Them the Hell Alone.
You should write that as a book, make a movie, a TV series, and a song. So people need to support the Big Cat Act. Yeah. And what can they do to get behind your organization?
With Outreach for Animals, well, we really don't, we need donations, of course. And but the one thing is that I want to be able to, if you're going to donate to Outreach for Animals, please go on our Facebook first and see what we do. I want you to be 100%, feel 100% right that you're sending money to the right place. Nobody gets a paycheck. None of us do. That's why we're public servants as emergency room doctors and cops and firemen who started it, right?
So
we don't
cool.
Get paid. Yeah, we don't get paid because we're the ones that see it. You know, we know what's going on out there. Just get on that Facebook and you'll just check and watch what we do. And because we can't put everything on because a lot of stuff we do is confidential. Because I always promise the people, you know, I just finished yesterday with somebody with an animal that I can't even mention because I told him, I said, I will never mention your name. Let me come on the property. Let me move this animal for you. I'm really proud of that. I'm not proud to be able to go onto somebody's property and have their trust. And just remember too, like my wife says, you've got hundreds of people call you on the phone, say, hey, this is Terry Brumfield kind of attitude, right? Hey, how you doing? What can I do to help you? I have brought people from the dark side with me. I'm talking into the hundreds.
You have.
I'm very proud of that.
I mean, I think you're one of the only men in America who gets phone calls about, hey, I decided not to own cheetahs anymore.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's kind of like self-help group. It's animal rescue. It's public safety. You're everything in one. All right, Tim, thank you so, so much for this. This is so great.
Well, thank you for having me on.
To learn more about Tim and his work and the exotic pet trade, go to our website, speciesunite.com. There are links and clips, and there's all sorts of information on there. There's also a link to The Elephant in the Living Room. So if you haven't seen it, definitely watch it. Tim and Mike are currently working on a new film, which will be out later this spring. We are also on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. And if you'd like to support the podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. You can do so in one of two ways. Subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, or we're also on Patreon. It's patreon.com/speciesunite. I'd like to thank everyone who made today's episode possible, including Gary Knutson, Natalie Martin, Allison Behringer, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thanks again. Have a wonderful day.